The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. You can drive a great deal with flexible finance from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Listening with interest is our first guest this morning, Leitrim playwright Seamus O'Rourke. Seamus, you're very welcome to the show.
Good morning, John.
We'll be talking in a minute about your play, which is doing the rounds at the moment. But have you ever shouted or been shouted at on the field of play?
Oh, man, yeah. I actually had a wee story that there was a bit of that about my father, and it was... You know, I remember when I used to play a bit of ball around the middle of the field, mostly I was tall and strong and good at the frees. That was before the bad knees and the hamstring trouble. And the old lad used to go to every match and he'd watch every kick and every catch I'd make or let fall. And then you'd hear him roaring, "Keep your eye on the ball, or what the hell are you at?" And then I got on the senior team. I know for me, that was like the realisation of a childhood dream. That's when the old lad started to chew the wire and smoke Joe Brady's fags because he had none of his own. And then you'd hear him roaring, "Look at number 9 all alone in the middle of the field. Would you mark him? Stop running round like an eagle. How could you play and you not fit? Let the ball do the work, let it into the square. Long balls, long balls, long balls." And then the ref would blow the whistle for a free against me, and thou let it start to boo, 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 boo ya, who ya boo. He wasn't a great booer. We got into a final and I got through in the goal, and I was thinking of thou let him playing the hero's role, and then was thinking of sticking the ball in the back of the net, and then I was met by this big fullback. Actually, he left me on my arse in the muck. "What kind of an idiot are you? Take him off to..." And not finish it. So that's where I'm coming from. I think all that abuse that's been shouted at kids should be kept and pointed at the ref instead. And I think there should be a national weekend for shouting at refs.
Do you think so?
After I quit playing...
Oh, the poor referees.
Yeah, after I quit playing, I realised that I had a bit of a talent of coming up with good ones from the sidelines. So I kind of use every match now for shouting at the ref. I think it's great pastime.
Nice one-liners.
They deserve it for becoming refs in the first place.
I say, no mercy, no mercy. Yeah, my favourite line about refs is somebody who shouted from the terraces, "I've seen better refs going to Lourdes." Anyway, it's not football fields that you're preoccupied with at the moment, but it is a class of a field, cemeteries and burials and digging graves. Tell us, first of all, about where your interest came from.
Well, I'm from Leitrim, as you said, a very rural part of the country, and we've always... buried our own dead, if you know what I mean. There was never any such thing as professional gravediggers. So when a local died, it was up to the family and friends and neighbours to dig the grave. So we grew up with that. And I suppose the idea for this play came about a neighbour of mine, a bit of a character, died, but he didn't have any immediate family. So myself and this other guy ended up one evening digging the grave on our own. And normally these things, there could be up to anything up to 20 people digging a grave, standing around chatting about the man's life or a woman's life or whatever it was. But on this occasion, it was a little bit eerie. And the other thing I realised was it's bloody hard work digging a 6x3x6 deep grave. So the idea came about because of that, because sometimes... it's very hard to root a play somewhere where you can play it out in real time, which I really wanted to do as opposed to plays that are narrated or told in flashbacks. So I thought that's a great place to put stage a play and work around that whole concept of digging a grave. And
the conversations that it leads to.
Yes, and I mean, it starts out with... there's an eeriness about... the start of a dig, in that you're breaking the soil and you're starting to dig up sacred ground, and so that has its own effect, and every grave, it starts out nice and quiet, but as the people gather to dig this grave, it usually ends up in a storytelling match, and it's great fun.
And is it usually about the deceased story?
Usually, yes, it is. Yeah. And only one can dig at a time. You know, you can't put all 20 of them in the grave. So there's a lot of people standing around, and it's really a competition to see who has the best story, come up with the funniest story. But in this instance, I obviously it couldn't all be about the banter of the digging of the grave. So the men involved had to have their own little problems, and as the play develops, these problems are brought to the surface. So we're kind of digging in two directions, if you know what I mean. So that's.
And what sort of problems then, Seamus?
Well, I play a character. He's a guard, which is that's not his problem. It might be.
His conversations are probably taped, but anyway.
Yes. But his son was killed a couple of years ago, and the guy that's digging the grave along with me, their two sons were friends, and so there's. There's a misunderstanding as to the circumstances where the young fella died and a few things like that. But also the ghost of the deceased is also on stage all the time. So that leads to a very interesting scenario. And I just put that in there because I wanted to get that link between the living and the dead and it adds to a lot of comedy in it because, you know, if someone could hear what's been said about them when they're gone.
Yes. When the crowd is gone. When the eulogies are over.
Yes, yeah. And all that. And the other thing, of course, funny enough, linking back into what we've just talked about and the football, the link with all these men is the GAA and these men who played football together and all that. And that was their only link. Although they're great friends, they've never really talked about anything personal. So someone said to me, you know, men who they would never talk about anything personal and yet in a dressing room would hug each other stark naked, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So it's a sort of the football is the link and the GAA and just that that there's a lot of that involved in it as well. So that's very interesting.
And is there a recognition, Seamus, that we do death well here in Ireland compared to some other countries?
Yeah, I think we'd cope with it in our own way. I mean, I certainly think that it's very much hands on, or has been over the years, and as in digging the graves, and as you know, a lot of people were laid out by their friends and family. There was no such thing as anybody coming in to do that, and that's not an easy thing. But I think all of that helps to cope with death, and we might be a little bit quick to react to a death in that, you know, someone might die tragically and within 2 hours there's lines of cars at the bottom of the lane queuing up to sympathise.
Sure.
And we have this great big word or big phrase which, you know, I'm sorry for your trouble, which is, you know, we were brought up as if that was the only thing you could say to somebody who was after a bereavement.
And you have one man in particular then who added a little bit of his own to a grieving widow.
One poor man who went to the pub for a few hours before he went to a removal, and he went up to the widow and he said, "I'm sorry for your trouble, but there's not a lot we can do about it now."
So she's telling the widow to move on within hours of her dear departed.
Yes.
And of course, when we went on that wonderful walk in Glenfarnan in County Leitrim, Seamus, you did a lovely recitation of a wake, a typical wake in the northwest of Ireland, and I think we can hear some of it now.
Mrs. Hogan died, God bless her, at the age of 84. And the husband, Johnny, hung a black cloth on the handle of the front door and he left it open so that anyone that had known her could come in and pay their respects. There was a great crowd went to the house that night to find out what age she was and to see was she sick or did she die of a sudden. And was she sick, Johnny? And Johnny said she wasn't sick, she was in great form and she ate an egg for the breakfast that morning, something she hadn't done in a long time. And what time did she die at, Johnny? Johnny said she died sometime after she ate the egg. And that's the way it goes, Johnny. And what age was she? 84. And that was a great age. Johnny said it was a great age to be living at, but not much good of an age to be dying at. The whole women of the country brought sandwiches and some of them brought tins of biscuits and them that was close to God brought buns that they had made the day before. They seemed to have inside information.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, lovely memories of that walk up in Glenfarn, Seamus. There's a serious side to the play, obviously. It's not all witty one-liners.
Not at all, no.
And it's also to do with men talking, and in some cases their inability to express what their emotions, their true emotions.
Very much so. And I mean, someone once said to me, you know, why don't you write more about women? And I said, well, when I understand them, I'll write about them. But not that I understand where the men are coming from either, but it's a very male play. But that, you know, and it's and at the end of the play, because a lot of things are dug up, as it were, it's quite an emotional thing, and it's very unusual to have three or four men in a really emotional situation. So what we've been trying to do with the play is to try and make it as real as possible. So we're trying to take away the acting and see how these people would react, because it's such a rare thing for it to be seen in public. You know, we all know, I've always said, as an actor, I've cried a lot more on stage than I ever cried off stage, if you know what I mean.
Why is that?
I just think it's the makeup of it's our makeup, my makeup anyway. I don't know about anyone else. And it was funny, I was chatting last week about the whole idea of Brian O'Driscoll and his retiring, you know, and Brian O'Driscoll and other Irish sports stars have brought tears to my eyes a lot quicker than any other emotional thing, you know, even the death of my father or anything else, you know. It's very strange.
That's extraordinary though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So the whole emotion, we say, of Brian O'Driscoll on the day he played his last game at the Aviva and with his daughter Sadie in his arms, would that have brought emotion from you? Or are you thinking of when he scored tries?
More practical.
More practical. When he scored the hat-trick of Paris, you started crying.
Exactly, yeah.
But that is intriguing.
Yes, it's I'm not sure if you can say it's an emotion. Well, I suppose it is an emotion, but it's not. I think the other emotions that we block, the ones, you know, of grief or whatever that is, we're trying in some way to protect ourselves, I suppose. Whereas within sport, it's almost an enjoyable emotion, if you know what I mean.
Yes, indeed. And also, when you experience the lows in sport, it makes you appreciate the highs that lot.
Yeah,
that bit
and
more.
Coming from Leitrim, you're just going to say, I've obviously, yes, I can appreciate all that.
Defeat is too regular an occurrence. And am I right in saying you recorded a tribute to Brian O'Driscoll?
I did, yeah.
It was a blast of some of it.
I'm not sure if I can remember all that, but I mean, it wasn't. It's just really those moments, as I've said, where he made the hair stand on the back of my neck and you know, bring tears to your eyes, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's happened to me with other people like John Tracy when he won his silver medal, and Eamon Coughlin when he won his the World Championships and all that, you know. That's
it's the penalty shootout,
the
Ireland.
Penalty
Romania.
Shootout. Well, yeah. No, I was more drunk that. Than
right. People can watch actually Seamus's tribute on his website to Brian O'Driscoll, SeamusO'Rourke.com. Have you a wee extract from the play now to give us, Seamus?
Nothing much apart from, you know, the fact that there's a few. Lines like, you know, the Undertaker is John White, and James McHugh says, you know, the only Undertaker to be caught using green diesel in a hearse. But it's very much an ensemble piece, and I suppose that's why I'm kind of avoiding doing a piece. Yes. But and it's very much we've got a fantastic set, and obviously that's needed, and we're using real good Leitrim clay with lots of stones in it, and I'm, as you can see, I've really bulked up for the part.
especially
for the part, yeah.
And it's in mid-tour at the moment. The play is called Dig, and you'll be in Carrigallen.
We're in Carrigallen tonight, and we're in we're up in the Mermaid Theatre in Bray next week.
And Ennis and Talla and Roscommon, Newbridge, Sligo, Castleblaney, Longford and Enniskillen. And the best thing to do, I suppose, is to go to your own website, is it?
Yeah, SeamusO'Rourke.com.
And you're going to stay with us, Seamus, because you're also intrigued by this whispering business.
Yeah,
we got you to watch a few videos. Yeah, all clean. Good, yeah, clean fun now. Yeah, but stay with us, Seamus. Okay. And as I said, if you want to find out more about Dig the Play taking place, SeamusO'Rourke.com is the website. Back in a moment.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.